For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome.
Good evening.
I'm happy to have given a talk this evening, Asian Nancy Easton, who completed being Shuso, or heading on for the practice period that ended yesterday. And she's, as former chef, she's now giving a talk this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Taigen. And thank you for asking. It's been really... It's been very, very rewarding to be your Shuso for the past 2 months. And it's, for everyone who's been here at least once in the past 9 weeks, you know that we have been talking about the 6 major bodhisattvas, and people in the practice period have been each studying a bodhisattva, and we've... all gained a great deal more familiarity with bodhisattvas, and you know how we can. We know a little bit about them scholarly, and you know we've increased our knowledge base about historical manifestations of the bodhisattvas. But we've also been studying about how they can relate to our lives, and how we can call upon bodhisattvas, and how we ourselves can be bodhisattvas, and. When Taigen asked me to give one more talk, I was happy about it because there was something more that I wanted to say, which I will say. But it also did feel a little bit like, oh, whoa, the finish line just got pushed back a little further. So I decided to run with that metaphor for this talk, and I want to ask you to just join me in a little exercise of imagination for a moment. I want you to imagine that you are running the Boston Marathon, and you've trained for it, and you've qualified for it, and you've been, you know, you got up real early that day, and you have been now running, you know, 25 some odd miles at this point, and you're just spent, and you come around that last corner onto Boylston Street, and you're expecting to see the finish line right there because you've looked at the map, and you look, and the finish line is like not there. It's been moved like another mile out. You know, you can see it like way down at the street. You know, blocks and blocks away. And what are you gonna do now? You know, you were prepared for like 26.2 miles, but now you've it's not happening, and you've got nothing left. And I think you kind of realize in that moment that, or hopefully we can realize, maybe by using the bodhisattvas, that we really never do anything by ourselves. In Japanese Zen, there are two sort of differing concepts that we don't talk about very much, but one is self-power, or jiriki, which is what we often rely on. We you know, show up and we sit and we pay attention and we try to be bodhisattvas. We often don't recognize opportunities to connect with what the Japanese call tariki, which is other power. But although that is other power, I think is featured much more in the Pure Land school of Buddhism, where it's really recognized that we don't do anything by ourselves. And that's part of Amida Buddha and praying to Amida Buddha. And it's something that we can engage in with our, you know, with our attention to bodhisattvas as well. My Dharma brother David Hill, who moved away a long time ago, but who, when he was here, was a marathoner and who became like this super ultra marathoner, gave a really great Dharma talk one time, I think back in the days before we were recording them, about his first ultra marathon. It was 100 miles. It was called the Javelina 100, and he ran across Texas. And what touched me most about his talk was he was talking about, you have 24 hours, okay, to run these 100 miles, and he was talking about how he had gotten to something like mile 70, and it's midnight, and he's got, you know, nothing left, and he is just so tired, he's about to, like, just fall asleep by the side of the road, and one of his friends, who also runs, apparently, because he ran, one of his friends sort of came out and ran with him for 20 miles and got him up to, you know, kind of over that hump. And since then, I've learned that it's very common for people to have friends in the crowd who will come and run with them for support. And that is one way that we, you know, we can rely on others for support. We've been talking about, you know, how to be bodhisattvas ourselves in the world, and that's maybe more a manifestation of jiriki, that I'm going to do this. But I want to sort of ask the question in this moment, when you're in this moment where you've got, you know, nothing left, you're running your marathon, how can we call upon the bodhisattvas for support? So we've been studying the six major bodhisattvas and the things that they, the qualities that they are known for. So one of the things that I think we need in that moment is some patience and maybe some meditation, and I think Maitreya, we could start with Maitreya as a good example. Maitreya is the future Buddha, and so Maitreya, you know, maybe can give us, and he's also very playful, and he can give us this feeling of, you know, your eye is on the finish line and you're not there yet. So how do you be with this situation that hasn't happened yet, that you still have to get through, that's very hard? You can develop some patience and the ability to just sort of have some forbearance. And you can also engage in some meditation. We can maybe just study the self. That's, Maitreya was known for the development of the Yogacara school, and we can recognize what are our six, you know, consciousnesses telling us, our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, and how our, just maybe even just paying attention to those in the moment. We can also use some of the meditation from Manjushri Bodhisattva, who's sitting on a lion throne on our altar, and who carries a sword, and his sword cuts through delusion and cuts through duality, and maybe we can harness some of that to not think too hard about the future, because we still have to get through right now. I spent one whole Zazen period yesterday thinking to myself, okay, over and over again, just get through right now, and right now, and right now, and just get through right now. And so maybe that's another way that we can find some support to get through this difficult moment. We can pay attention just to what's happening and just to the sensations, and allow ourselves to get maybe caught up by that a little bit, and so to study ourselves and to forget ourselves a little bit. And to forget ourselves then, you know, in Genjo Koan leads to being illuminated by all things. And I think that's maybe a way in which we can call upon the energy of Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, who rides an elephant, which is how our legs are maybe feeling at this moment of running through the marathon, but who also represents interconnectedness. So, you know, you're close to the finish line, the crowd is going wild, you know, they know what's going on, they're just, you know, cheering for you, and that energy can really help you through you know, this difficult moment as well. So you take on some of that energy from the crowd, and that maybe helps you continue in your efforts. We have some effort and recognition of interconnectedness, and We also then maybe can try crying out to Kanzeon, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, who hears the cries of the world and who responds. And the way he's going to respond here is by setting up one of those water aid tables with, you know, 1,000 arms of volunteers offering you a little cup of Gatorade on one side or water on the other side. And you know, they reach out. And as you run by, they know where you are and they just, you know, they just put it right in your hand and there, and you get some sustenance and you kind of keep going. So, you know, and they're also cheering you on. They tell you you can do it. And you get past the aid station, and there's your friend Jizo in the crowd. And Jizo Bodhisattva is the Bodhisattva who will go with beings to the hell realms and will bear witness to their suffering. And so Jizo is your friend who jumps out of the crowd at you and keeps running with you and keeps you going and is filming your whole epic struggle, you know, on his cell phone camera so that he can post it on Facebook later and everyone will see, you know, just how hard this was. Because he's the friend who's recognizing this is hard, you know, and he's going to take a selfie with you just to help things along. So we have five of the major bodhisattvas, and I loved this metaphor so much I just, you know, decided to kind of keep going with it. But I couldn't figure out, you know, how do we fit Vimalakirti into this? How can we call upon Vimalakirti, who is the enlightened layperson? So Vimalakirti was is the bodhisattva who was able to point, kind of a trickster, you know, and he gives all, in the Vimalakirti Sutra, he gives all the major bodhisattvas a little bit of, you know, gives them opportunities, I guess is a good way to say, to recognize the ways in which they are caught in duality. He, you know, shows one bodhisattva that, you know, giving, you have to sometimes, you can't just, it's not just one person's effort. Or, you know, another bodhisattva is, you know, just engaged in silent solo meditation, and so he points out to that bodhisattva, you know, you can't just turn your back on the world. So Vimalakirti is always offering opportunities for bodhisattvas to recognize their blind spots or recognize ways in which they are attached and holding on to something that they haven't seen yet in their practice. And so it finally dawned on me that Vimalakirti is the guy who moved the finish line in the first place. So that we could have this opportunity to recognize our duality in our solo effort and call upon all of these bodhisattvas and appreciate that we aren't doing this by ourselves. You know, Vimalakirti pulls the rug out from under you and, you know, and that's when I realized that, you know, that's maybe a helpful way to look at a lot of situations in life. A lot of situations that where we are kind of caught by something that we don't want to be in, we don't like, we want to get away from it. If this would just be better, this would just change, everything would be better. And I think, you know, Vimalakirti maybe is the bodhisattva who's giving us those challenges so that we can see, you know, where we're caught, where we're getting attached to, you know, our ideas about how things should be, rather than letting go and accepting how things are. And at this moment, I'm realizing I forgot to bring a watch. So I'm hoping I could borrow your watch. Thank you. Oh, see, there's always a bodhisattva. So I want to talk a little bit about how bodhisattvas can work together, how we can use the energy of different bodhisattvas in our lives. And I was inspired to do this because a couple weeks ago, right before I was about to give a talk on Maitreya, I was just, you know, here early that morning, and I was looking at all the new books that we put out in the library, and I found a book that had a really intriguing title by Tim Burkett from Minnesota Zen Meditation Center, and I flipped the book open, and it happened that the place that I turned the book open to, he was talking about Maitreya and talking about this very concept of how bodhisattvas can work together. And so I was just so struck by this and so appreciative that this, you know, that I happened to find this right on the day when I was talking about Maitreya. And it also reminded me that that's another way in which we never do anything by ourselves. We know a lot more about bodhisattvas now than we did before, because Taigen wrote Faces of Compassion about the bodhisattvas, and that's what we've been studying for our practice period. And we also, you know, so many ways in which we depend on the wisdom of others, and that helps us to, find our way with something. So I do want to talk about how bodhisattvas can act in concert to produce beneficial action in our lives and in the world. And kind of the way I was just talking about our Boston Marathon experience, we can use maybe some of the patience and generosity of Maitreya as we think about things that we want to do in the world. You know, Maitreya can help in thinking about a future that we would like to envision. You know, how can we set, you know, a clear and firm intention and have some aspiration and maybe feel a little bit inspired by our ideas of the future, our ability to bring some of the generous spirit of Maitreya to situations, and the ability to have some patience. We can, you know, study ourselves in meditation, and so that's a good beginning to thinking about, you know, what kind of action do I want to bring to something. We can call upon the meditation and wisdom of Manjushri as we study not just ourselves, but we study the situation. You know, what is the situation at hand? Maybe it's a conflict with a loved one, or maybe it's wanting to, you know, do some other kind of good activity in the world that we want to, you know, maybe cut through our delusions about it. We want to try to really look at the situation, not just from what do I want to do, but how might my actions be a little bit more skillfully applied if I study, what is this? Where is there a place for me to gain some leverage on this situation? We then maybe need to call upon Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of Compassion, to, you know, open our hearts so that we can give. And in giving, we can also receive. And I think that, you know, this is where we kind of recognize that we need to harness both compassion and wisdom. They kind of need to temper each other. If we act without compassion and just you know, we've studied a situation very clearly, and we can, you know, really have our laser-like precision of the situation, but we don't have compassion, we can really cause some harm. Someone asked a question during the Shuso ceremony about, is it possible to commit an intentionally cruel act with full awareness and with full mindfulness? And so I had to think about that, and I think it really is. And we need things like ethical conduct, compassion, and as well as wisdom to see the far-reaching effects of our actions. At the same time, compassion without wisdom can sometimes cause us to maybe lose ourselves and maybe over-focus on the other or over-focus on our ideas of what's compassion. I think Pema Chodron calls this idiot compassion, where we're thinking that we're being compassionate, but we're really being not very skillful. There's a way in which, actually, I think that wisdom without compassion stops being wisdom. It takes both compassion and wisdom to really be able to see the far-reaching effects of our actions or in a given situation. And compassion without wisdom starts being... Sometimes it just turns into sort of niceness and passivity, and sometimes it's, It's just not very skillful. So these two kinds of energy, I think, really need to balance each other out as we approach our actions. And then we also need to call upon Samanta Bhadra to put, who's the Bodhisattva of great activity, so who can help us to put our action into the world, you know, recognizing that we are all interconnected and that our actions do have far-reaching effects. You know, how can we act with compassion and wisdom to bring about some beneficial results? When we take action without using these qualities, we can sometimes really burn out, or we can really act unskillfully because our action misses the mark. And so I think that's, part of what is important about bodhisattvas is they help us remember the different aspects that we need to bring to situations. So, let's see. I think I just want to kind of close this, and we can maybe move into some discussion by just... talking about, I think Reb Anderson says in Being Upright, he talks about how as Zen practitioners, we are all collecting stories. We tell stories all the time about, past teachers or bodhisattvas or all kinds of situations, and they're stories that we can use them as tools. As you become more familiar with all different stories of all different kinds of Zen stories, they become, part of your vocabulary and your vocabulary of what's happening in a situation. And, sometimes they offer us some guidance unexpectedly that we didn't realize we were going to find, And as Zen practitioners, we meet many challenging situations off the cushion, as well as on the cushion. We have many stories, lots of teachers, and lots of archetypes, and one good use of skillful means, I think, is to apply all of these stories and concepts to help us to study and understand and act in the world with an open heart, which is, I think, really the goal for all of us. As Taigen says close to the end of Faces of Compassion, we're all bodhisattvas. We're all bodhisattvas who are trying to find our way to really skillfully bring these qualities to the situations that we encounter in the world. So, maybe we can all help each other to do that as we continue to practice together. And maybe we can have a little bit of a discussion about that or about anything that is coming up today. But thank you for allowing me one more talk.
So, comments, questions, responses?
Stephen.
Unlikely to ever run the Boston Marathon, but
me neither.
I love your image of the volunteer sending of water as a manifestation of Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. It's the thousand arms that definitely fits. It's a good reminder that Avalokiteshvara takes on many forms in the world, and that it's also, I think, a good reminder to be mindful of recognizing when people are offering them compassion. Like sometimes I can be so caught up in myself that I don't always recognize or appreciate that. Like maybe they're trying to hand me water, and all I'm thinking is, I don't need a drink, they're crying the mat. They're always so helpful and cheerful, and they're always cheering and trying to help. So rather than
thank you. You know, related to that, I can fall into this trap, and maybe others can too, of feeling like if I didn't already figure it out, you know, I should have already figured this out. You know, it can sometimes feel shameful to accept others' compassion. And I think that's a function of our sort of hyper-independent, you know, American culture, that we feel like we should be able to do all these things. And it's humbling, but also heartening to be able to let that go a little bit and you know, not feel ashamed at not having everything all perfectly together and needing some help sometimes. Suzanne.
And just we had just the tiniest little exchange in the kitchen, and you said, "We'll get through this." Just that phrase was literally like, "Okay, right, everybody in the room, like we will, like the, was that, you know, we're doing this together, we're not doing this alone. That's the whole point."
Yeah. Well, you know, you actually helped me too in the grasping the doorway. I hadn't thought of that, and doing that stretch that we ended up doing, I had not thought of that, and it was actually very helpful.
So when you started this metaphor, oh my gosh, that is exactly it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was
having a lot of back pain, but I was also facing the room, and I could see actually that there was a lot of pain, and especially in the afternoon, that people were, you know, finding ways of being with, and that's inspiring too. Makes you want to just get up and rub somebody's shoulders, you know? David, our marathoner, the actual marathoner.
Having been shitted on by people when I couldn't go on anymore, that was first, then having been going out and helping a friend of mine run this last 6 miles in a marathon. It's even so tired. I really love that metaphor. I kind of say that Bo is here tonight because don't know boys that does a lot of improvisation theater. And I remember too many years ago, that I was in a theater group and we did improv. And one of the things we actually would do was climb up a ladder, turn around, face backwards, and just fall. And the group would be underneath to catch you. And they have that sense of trust that it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And people out there are not in this alone. We're all in this together. And the trust that builds when you're in the theater company, that, you know, you could play off of each other.
Uh-huh.
Because there's so much trust. Yeah. And maybe that's what, unfortunately, is lacking so much in our society. There's no trust. So everybody's in bad armor instead of being...
Yeah. Open-hearted. Open-armed.
Open-armed. And ready to... And for my myself too, when sometimes sitting and I'm in pain, I concentrate on the other people breathing in the room.
Yeah.
It's a gift from me to them, but also a gift from them to me.
Yeah.
It's that, again, that trust, that interconnection.
Yeah. Thanks. That is so important. I trust. Trust is something that I think we build over time. Caitlin. Violence can so easily make things worse and close the hearts of those that we're trying and hoping to change rather than open them. Thanks for the reminder. Nicole. Oh, you're just bowing. Okay.
Message of trust and kindness and hearing possibilities that you were talking about is so important now in the difficulties of all this happening in our society, as Caitlin mentioned, and not knowing, you know, how to respond and yet how to stay open. Respond strongly but peacefully. World we are in, and the Bodhisattva teachings and practices and the approaches we've been studying are part of a guidance that we can all share together. So thank you, Patient, for your talk tonight and for helping to support this for the last 2 months.
Thank you.
Any last comments or responses? Yes.
I have a response. You just reminded me of this practice period started just before, but right around the time of our Buddha's birthday celebration, and it made me think about how, you know, as new babies, we are totally dependent on the care of others and the compassion of others to keep us alive. You know, and as we grow, we develop a lot of skills so that we can, you know, generally take care of ourselves. And hopefully, you know, as we grow spiritually in our practice, we can develop a lot of skills so that we can also care for others, you know, so that we can extend our feeling of self and recognize all the ways that we are connected with others and rely upon each other for care. So thank you for reminding me of that.